Global climate change, we accept and we are responding to by developing plans to adapt to the impacts.
The Navy maps out its strategy in the melting Arctic. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 8th of July. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the federal government gives state lawmakers a time limit for overriding the governor's veto of stimulus funds for energy programs.
We're the only state out of 50 that has not applied for this money.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by BP. Giving back to the community is a priority because so many at BP call Alaska home. And by the new AT&T, your world delivered.
The U.S. Department of Energy appears unwilling to wait for next year's legislative session for a possible override of Governor Sarah Palin's veto of $28 million in federal stimulus money set aside for energy programs. Larry Persily has been working on the federal grants for House Finance Co-Chair Mike Hawker. Persily says he is explaining to federal officials the problems of organizing a special session at this time of year when members are working on their interim jobs. He hasn't yet received a formal notification from the U.S. Energy Department, but informally, they tell him a delay until January is not acceptable.
2010, even if it's the first month of 2010, that is just really not an option. They'd like to get it done this year. We're the only state out of 50 that has not applied for this money.
The federal deadline for the legislative attempt at an override was originally set for this past May, and Persily says the Energy Department has so far been willing to hold the files open, just not until next year. The legislature can call itself into a special session after House and Senate leaders get a positive response from a poll of members. The U.S. Navy is laying out plans for the warming waters above Alaska as shipping and resource development opportunities increase. Climate models predict the Arctic Ocean will be ice-free in summer in less than three decades. Commander Tim Gallaudet works in the Office of Oceanography for the Navy, and he just finished a collaborative workshop on Arctic issues in Anchorage. Gallaudet says he's in Alaska to represent the Navy's interests in the Arctic. He says the Navy launched a climate change task force a few months ago.
This task force climate change, as we're calling it, is an element of the Navy headquarters, the Chief of Naval Operations Staff. And the purpose of this task force is to develop a roadmap first for the Arctic, Navy action for the Arctic, to guide our policy and strategy and potential future investments. And then secondly, we'll look into global climate change at large. Now, because the effects in the Arctic and globally we still have a hard time understanding them fully. There's much uncertainty in the predictions and in the observations of what we're seeing. We view investing in research as one of our first and foremost tasks, as well as investments to adapt to the decreasing ice in the Arctic. For example, on our weapon systems or platforms or communications and our installations and facilities. You know, we've had some facilities in the past in Alaska, for example, our base at ADAC, which we do not occupy anymore, but we'll look at the effect of this climate change on installations and determine whether or not, based on threat as well as the environment, whether we need to reinvest in those or not.
Has the task force had enough time to sort of lay out the challenges and the work that they're seeing for the Navy in the coming decades? Have you had enough time to do that yet?
Generally, we have. And to be honest with you, The operating environment in the Arctic is challenging. It's a very harsh environment. And although that you are led to believe from news reports that say that the Arctic is opening, might cause one to conclude that it's not going to be smooth sailing throughout and like the waters off Southern California. And that's not the case, as you know. In fact, the term open is a World Meteorological Organization term. And what that means is it means that there is less than one-tenth of the sea covered by ice. Well, that's still a lot of ice in the sea. And if you don't have an icebreaker in that region, your ships are going to have a hard time sailing and be put at great risk. So things we envision doing are partnering in research and observation and prediction of the environment there, as well as surveying efforts, mapping the bathymetry for improved navigation charts and safety of navigation, as well as cooperative efforts such as search and rescue exercises or actual events. And potentially what I think will be very significant because of the nature of the pristine environment in the region will be supporting oil spill response. Now, that's a U.S. Coast Guard mission, so DOD has a support, may have a supporting role when called. And so we may look at increasing our ability to support things like that in the future.
There has been some dispute between Canada, the U.S., and Russia over Arctic borders and resource claims. What's the level of concern within the Navy over these competing claims, and what will the Navy's role be in this?
Well, the Navy is not very concerned about those disputes. In fact, they're pretty much State Department issues, and our role is national security. And we know that we have very strong relationships with all the Arctic nations, Canada, Russia, Norway. And so we're not very concerned with those at all, in fact. And I think the nature of those disputes, if any, of those that few that there are generally friendly. And so they really have no bearing on, at present, on the Navy and our relationships with those countries' militaries.
Commander Tim Gallaudet works in the Navy's Oceanography Office and is part of the newly formed Task Force on Climate Change. He says the task force plan will be released in September. A longer version of the interview is on our website, aprn.org. Lower 48 crews are being tapped to battle Alaska wildfires for the first time this summer. Alaska Fire Service spokesman Doug Stockdale says crews from Idaho arrived yesterday to begin working the Minto Flats South Fire west of Nenana.
We have just assigned 5 Type 1 crews, and they were assigned directly to the fire. So they're going to be going out there to start providing support to start suppressing the fire. Basically, that means putting in line where they can, tying it into barriers such as the river or lakes, things like that, making sure that they can get around the fire.
192 people are now battling the Minto Flats South Fire, which has consumed about 125,000 acres. Work is underway to protect a natural gas exploration drilling site in the vicinity. Stockdale says the fire also threatens native land allotments and remote cabins.
There's a number of folks who have called in who have isolated cabins around lakes in the area. They want to know, hey, what's happening out there? We understand that. We know where most of the cabins are. We don't know where everything's at, but they've been mapped, and that's where we're putting our resources.
The Minto Flats South Fire is one of 9 wildfires getting attention statewide. Fairbanks Area State Fire Management spokesman Robert Schmall says 20 additional smoke jumpers are being brought up in anticipation of more fire activities as a string of dry days with 80 to 90 degree temperatures continues. He says it has fire managers concerned about a repeat of the record fire summer 5 years ago.
You know, right now we're getting the conditions that are kind of similar to, 2004. And I haven't seen the report, but I heard early this morning they were getting lightning between McGrath and Ween Lake. We had 90 strikes here, I think, before 10 o'clock this morning, which is pretty early. So we may end up with a bunch more fires here.
Rain showers are forecast for tonight and tomorrow in several areas of the interior, but Schmall says they might not materialize. Dozens of wildfires, mostly in the interior, are burning in remote country and spreading smoke across the state. Dry conditions sent extra fire department units and a helicopter to control a blaze in Anchorage today. At about 1 p.m., the department received several reports of a brush fire just off of East 18th Avenue in the Airport Heights neighborhood. Battalion Chief Cleo Hill says the extra units were needed to make sure the fire did not escalate.
At one point, the closest the flames got to any structure was about 150 feet. So there was actually no danger at that particular time for any of the structures in the area. We did have a lot of families calling, saying we've heard that we should evacuate. In actuality, APD only evacuated one particular residence.
By 1:45, crews had managed to extinguish the burn, but were still watching the area for hot spots. Hill says that they won't know the cause of the fire until later this afternoon. She says the fire department has been extra busy after the 4th of July weekend. There have been at least 11 other brush fires since the holiday, the majority of which have been started by children.
It's not like we have a bunch of little kids running wild and loose, but they're not being monitored every second of the day. So we're really hoping that the parents will be very proactive in speaking with their children about using fire inappropriately. The conditions are just way too dry to take that chance.
Hill says investigators do not yet know whether the Airport Heights fire was started by a child. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a famous document makes a visit to Alaska.
My boss, Norman Lear, bought it in the year 2000 for $8.14 million.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Go deep inside Alaska, where the unparalleled meets the unexpected. Fairbanks emanates a quality of light, energy, and warmth found nowhere else on Earth. It's the unexpected Alaska. Fairbanks, located right in your own backyard, is full of activities from the mild to the wild. Experience summer's land of the midnight sun in Fairbanks. Information about attractions, travel, accommodations, and more online at explorefairbanks.com. This message sponsored by the Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Candidates have begun to come forward to try for the job now held by Governor Sarah Palin, and former House Speaker John Harris is the first Republican name on the list. He announced today his plans to run in the 2010 Republican gubernatorial primary. Harris says he was waiting until Palin's state political plans were more certain.
I was prepared to file a letter of intent to run for lieutenant governor. And then this bombshell hit, so to speak, you know, and which caught a lot of people off guard. And I said, look, you know, she's not going to run again. And I said, if she didn't run, I would run. So I'm filing to run for governor.
Yesterday, Harris gave the Alaska Public Offices Commission a letter of intent to run for office, which allows him to raise money for the campaign. However, he has not taken the final step to get his name on next summer's primary ballot that would require filing with the Division of Elections, a step he says he will not take until after next year's legislative session. Elected from Valdez, Harris's district during his time in office has covered an area from just outside North Pole to Palmer, Cordova, and Whittier. He says he feels he is well known in that area, but recognizes that he has to be better known in the rest of the state.
I'm on the road. I'm out here at the Chugiak Eagle River Chamber of Commerce today. This morning, I played in the Special Olympics golf tournament. I'm on the state board for the Special Olympics. I've been making calls, working with people, talked to various different folks around the state, working on getting support.
Harris realizes he will not be the only Republican to run in the primary. Lieutenant Governor Sean Parnell says he is likely to run. Among others considering the race are former Lieutenant Governor Lauren Lehman, former House Majority Leader Ralph Samuels, and Alaska Railroad Chairman John Binkley. The House Judiciary Committee will hold a confirmation hearing for Lieutenant Governor Designee Lieutenant General Craig Campbell on July 20th in Fairbanks. The hearing is designed to clear up the legal confusion over who will assume the number two spot in the administration once Lieutenant Governor Sean Parnell takes over for Governor Palin. KTOO's Matt Miller reports.
After Talis Colberg stepped down as Attorney General, Governor Palin named a new cabinet member as Lieutenant Governor Designee, should that office ever be vacated. Her pick, Corrections Commissioner Joe Schmidt, was confirmed by a joint session of the legislature in April. But during Friday's resignation announcement, Palin named Lieutenant General Craig Campbell of the Alaska National Guard, who's also Adjutant General and Commissioner of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Campbell says Palin's resignation was a complete surprise, but he remembers discussing the line of succession with her several weeks ago.
I've got probably one of the best jobs in the state running the National Guard of Alaska and what we do at DMVA, but I think I'm going to one of the best jobs in the state, and that's being Lieutenant Governor and working with Sean Parnell. It's an opportunity that has been allowed to me by Sarah Palin. I'm very grateful for, and yes, I think I'm ready for it. I think I'll do a good job. I've got a lot of experience in government over the last 25 years, and I look forward to the challenges.
Oversight of the Division of Elections is one of the primary duties of the Lieutenant Governor. Corrections Commissioner Joe Schmidt declined to comment on the succession issue. He said through a spokesman that he remains committed to corrections. Governor Palin's apparent change of mind presents a problem for both the executive and legislative branches. Jack Chenoweth, legislative counsel with the Legislative Affairs Agency, fears that it will all become fodder for lawyers in the end. The framework for succession is laid out in the Constitution, while statute requires legislative confirmation of the lieutenant governor designee.
The person designated and confirmed is next in line for succession to the office of lieutenant governor, subject to the pleasure of the governor. The subject to the pleasure of the governor tag is what gives Governor Palin the right to remove, if that's what she's done, Joe Schmidt or anybody else. The first part of that sentence, the person designated and confirmed is next in line for succession. Seems to me that there's an argument that confirmation must precede the designee's claim on the right to hold the office.
Aside from Governor Palin's announcement on Friday, Chenoweth says they still have not received any documentation on the switch.
I'd like to see them put something on the record, both in terms of what happened to Mr. Schmidt's confirmed appointment? Where is the appointment? Where is the document appointing Lieutenant General Campbell? And what is anybody thinking in the administration about the possibility of a joint session to confirm the fellow, if there is to be a change?
Campbell says he will have to retire after 35 years in the military to assume the partisan office of Lieutenant Governor. He previously served as a nonpartisan Anchorage Assembly member and worked for the Anchorage Public Works Department. Campbell will also have to give up his position as Military and Veterans Affairs Commissioner. He's prohibited from simultaneously serving as Lieutenant Governor and Commissioner. A decision on his successor is up to the incoming governor.
I hope they'll ask my counsel. I mean, I've done this job for 6.5 years and have a pretty good flavor of some of the individuals that could be doing this job very well, and I don't even know who's interested. I haven't really had any inquiries from anybody, which was surprising. I assumed that I'd be getting a lot of calls from people who said, hey, I'd like to have your job, but there really hasn't been that rush of calls. So I suspect the governor, and I would hope that the governor will you know, ask my guidance as a lieutenant governor to just give me my opinion on individuals that ask to be interested in being the adjutant general.
Governor designee Sean Parnell is expected to take the oath of office at the end of the governor's annual picnic in Fairbanks, July 26. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Commissioner Joe Schmidt says he sent a letter to Governor Palin resigning as lieutenant governor designee. Schmidt says he considered the designation an honor, but he did not feel it was appropriate to suddenly leave the corrections department for the new post. Judgment day for former VECO executives Bill Allen and Rick Smith may come in about 2-3 months. Yesterday, U.S. District Judge John Sedgwick set October 28th as the sentencing date for the two men. Each pleaded guilty to felony charges of conspiracy, bribery, and fraud more than 2 years ago. They admitted giving state lawmakers money in exchange for votes, but have been free since then. Because Allen and Smith helped the government with its investigation, prosecutors have repeatedly requested sentencing delays, and Judge Sedgwick has granted them 5 times. But yesterday, the judge wrote that the community has a substantial interest in seeing punishment imposed for the crimes without delay. Sedgwick said the men's crimes are significant ones, which involve the integrity of the political process in the state of Alaska. Allen and Smith have been key witnesses in the corruption cases against former state legislators Vic Coring and Pete Cott. Allen was also the linchpin witness in the trial of former Alaska Senator Ted Stevens and testified that his company renovated Stevens' house off the books. However, the case against Stevens fell apart after the government revealed prosecutors failed to turn over information to Stevens' defense, including contradictory statements Allen made under questioning. The cases against Coring and Cott are also on the rocks. They were both released from prison last month because prosecutors withheld information from their defense teams, too.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business, or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Today is the final day Princess cruise ships in Juneau are displaying the Declaration of Independence. The document is one of 200 broadside copies distributed across the 13 colonies and read to the public on July 4, 1776. Most of the 26 remaining broadsides are housed in libraries, museums, and archives. Only one copy is touring the nation, and Alaska was the 37th state on its itinerary. KTOO's Rebecca Shear has more.
It all began in 1989 when a flea market shopper in Pennsylvania took a shine to an old painting.
He paid $4 for it, was inspecting a tear in the back of the painting, and found this copy of the Declaration of Independence folded up between the lining and the canvas.
This is Erica Johansson, the copy's babysitter, I guess you could say. More on that in a moment, but first, to continue our story, this flea market shopper wasn't sure whether this unexpected find was for real, so he got it authenticated.
By the Getty and Sotheby's, and then sold it at auction for $1.1 million.
Fast forward a few years, the document is authenticated a few more times, sold a few more times.
And then my boss, Norman Lear, bought it in the year 2000 for $8.14 million.
For those of you born after, say, 1985, TV producer Norman Lear was the driving force behind such hits as All in the Family, One Day at a Time, The Facts of Life, The Jeffersons. He also runs a nonprofit organization called
Declare Yourself, and we do youth photo registration. And we're also the organization that tours the document.
Ann Johansson, who officially bears the title of Program Coordinator, unofficially bears the title of Document Babysitter.
Well, it's incredible. I mean, I've been to the RNC, the DNC, the Olympics,
the Indy 500, the Super Bowl, countless museums, schools, and libraries.
We try to inspire as many people as possible. Over 100,000 people have seen it. Norman believes it's the people's document.
I heard he also calls it America's birth certificate.
Yes, and people shouldn't have to travel to Washington, D.C. in order to see it. It should come to them.
And now, for the first time in its 9-year tour, this birth certificate of a nation, this people's document, has come to Alaska. Several dozen Junoites were invited to view the copy last week.
Hello, good afternoon.
At a private soiree aboard the Coral Princess.
Welcome aboard.
A handful of local VIPs gathered in the ship's wheelhouse bar for wine, salmon tartare, and a photo op with the 233-year-old broadside.
All right, on to big smiles. Ready? One, two.
Oh, and a certain public radio reporter also managed to talk her way into the event.
Thank you, Blinks, ma'am. One more.
In terms of actual Alaskans seeing the thing, the princess photo op was pretty much it. See, last year, Declare Yourself and Princess Cruises worked out this agreement. The document would spend the week of July 4th, 2009, in Juneau. By night, it would be tucked away in an undisclosed location in town, protected by armed guards. By day, it would be displayed on princess ships in port. But security restrictions only allow passengers and crew to board those ships, which might lead one to ask,
given that Norman Lear calls it America's birth certificate, wouldn't it be kind of nice if more Alaskans got to maybe take a look?
Well, let's look at the bright side of this, is that, you know, we are exposing our customers while they're in Alaska. We're giving a chance for some Alaskans to view it, and what a great way for us to continue to celebrate the 50th anniversary of statehood. Like I said, it's a real positive thing.
This super positive guy is Bruce Bustamante.
I'm the Vice President of Community and Public Affairs for Princess Cruises and Tours.
Speaking outside the Coral Princess before the party, he said it was no accident the document was visiting Juneau the week of July 4th, 2009. 50 years after the Capitol first raised the 49-star U.S. flag.
How timely to have a copy of the Declaration on top of the 50th anniversary of statehood. We think this is going to be a memorable opportunity for not only Juneau, but for the guests on our ships. And can you imagine 17,000 people going back to their homes saying they had a wonderful Alaska cruise experience when they were in the state capital of Juneau, they had a chance to see the Declaration.
A valid point, to be sure, but there are just about 30,000 people in that state capital who didn't have a chance. A princess PR person did tell me she was trying to organize a public exhibit, but the event never happened. Still, unofficial Declaration babysitter Erica Johansson isn't ruling out a return visit.
Any chance the tour might bring it back to Alaska, perhaps another part of the state?
Perhaps. I mean, all we need is funding, so if you guys want to bring us back, we'd be happy to come back.
And if the People's Document does make its way back to the 49th state, perhaps next time the people will actually get to see it. In Juneau, I'm Rebecca Shear.
A 25,000-acre parcel of the Tongass National Forest near Juneau has been set aside as an experimental forest. It's part of a network of more than 80 experimental forests and grasslands across the country. Called Hien Latini, it will be managed by the U.S. Forest Service Pacific Northwest's Research Station and the Alaska region. The experimental forest is accessible by road from Juneau. The effects of climate change on forest-related resources will be a major research focus, according to Sandy Boyce, issues coordinator for the Forest Service in Juneau.
With climate change, there's got to be more cross-agency and organization collaboration because the changes are going to have some significant impacts, particularly here in Alaska where the impacts are predicted to be large, like a 10-degree change in average temperature.
The Rainforest Center is an idea that's been kicked around for years, but was never funded by the university, says UAS Chancellor John Pugh. Under the current concept, UAF and UAS will collaborate with the Forest Service and City on Tongass Forest research and education.
To ensure that we are able to do appropriate research in Alaska's temperate rainforest and to be able to get out information to the K-12 community as well as the university community and to public about that ecosystem and what's going on with it, what are the changes taking place, and of course use some of that research and information for the agencies as well as communities and tribal organizations and so on to make management decisions.
Juneau Mayor Bruce Botello says a coordinating committee representing each agency will be set up later this summer. Eventually, a director will be hired and an office located on the University of Alaska Southeast campus. Botello says Juneau owns greenbelt adjacent to the new experimental forest, so it brings land to the partnership. He says the collaboration presents the capital city with an opportunity.
Anything we can do to enhance the scientific community in Juneau to look at opportunities for collaboration creates a synergy that will benefit us not only for the research itself, but also in terms of bringing, I think, very high-paying jobs and a level of education and skills to the community. And we should be seeing it and seeing the university itself as a major economic driver in the community.
Other agencies are expected to come on board later, including the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks and Matt Miller, Rebecca Shear, and Rosemary Alexander in Juneau. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., Dave Donaldson from Juneau, and Susanna Caldwell from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Northern Air Cargo, with scheduled flights to 16 destinations throughout Alaska every week. Northern Air Cargo, building strong relationships with the communities they serve. Alaska Communication Systems, ACS, offers high-capacity, high-speed bandwidth for business with speeds up to Gig E, connecting companies from the North Slope to Ketchikan to each other and the rest of the world. And by the UAF College of Engineering and Mines, providing early registration for fall engineering classes at 1-877-474-7390. Information at uaf.edu/cem.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.